I'm with Samantha Anderl. Samantha is the co-founder at Interimly. Interimly helps growing tech companies build their foundations for scale through strategies and programs that accelerate revenue and minimize costs. Before starting Interimly, Samantha was the head of marketing at Campaign Monitor's self-service division. So welcome.
Thank you. Excited to chat today.
Yeah, have we ever met in person? I feel like you're one of my online friends that I've never actually met in real life.
I don't know that we have. I think we are Twitter buddies.
I think that's true. And part of the reason is I'm sort of a super fan of Campaign Monitor. And I think that's when I first sort of got to know you online, was when you were there, because I was probably, you know, saying something nice about it or something. Who knows?
And I actually, through my first couple of jobs, we all used Raven Tools. And so I knew.
Oh, sweet.
Through that as well. So yeah, two great companies that bring people together.
I love it. I love it. That is so good to hear. And we're, of course, we both have left those companies. And yep. I'm currently doing this called Koi Wolf. And then I have my day job, and I'm not going to go into my day job, but I do love my day job. And you have co-founded a new company that I just talked about, which is called Interimly. And so what inspired that name?
Yeah. So Andrea Wilt and I, Andrea being my co-founder, we actually worked together at Campaign Monitor for about 3 years before founding Interimly. So, you know, when we were looking to go in a different direction, we just started talking about what we both loved doing. And it really came down to the fact that we both loved building and marketing, right? We both loved building marketing programs, building foundations through marketing ops, building up teams, all of these things. So when she and I were talking, we were like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to take all of our experience building and helping tech companies grow at these various stages and just do that all the time, right? Because oftentimes you work for a company, you know, you build things for the first year, year and a half, 2 years, then you kind of go into optimization mode, the market changes, right? But that's where Interimly came into play. So we view ourselves as an interim addition to someone's marketing team when they have a certain need or at a certain stage of growth. So we come in and we help them build a program. We help them fix a program, audit a program. We give them the guidance they need to kind of handle it internally moving forward. So that's where Interimly came from. We're your interim marketing team.
Nice. I like that. And I think it's definitely an interesting name, and it's a unique name. And I'm curious to know, and this is kind of for anybody who's listening that is thinking of sort of jumping ship, you know, and starting their own thing. You know, they're basically thinking of the being an entrepreneur maybe for the first time. I mean, where does that come from? I mean, how did the two of you where did that timing come from? What sort of spurred that on to get you to make that big jump?
Yeah. So luckily for me, my business partner, Andrea, had a, you know, expansive background in consulting and also starting her own businesses. She actually started a company before we founded Interimly a few years back. She did consulting for about 10 years. And so, you know, she kind of, I think this is how it happened. I think she kind of brought it up to me. We started talking about it. You know, and I was like, that sounds great. Do we think we can make this into a company, or are we going to be like independent consultants? What are we going to do here? And we just decided that, you know, we both had relevant backgrounds, our experiences and like our marketing expertise. Actually, we have some overlap, but they're also pretty broad. So we cover a lot of area, which is she and I. And we have really great networks. So, you know, she and I were like, I think that we can make this work. We can build this into something. We have a lot of friends and people in our network who trust us. Like, we think we can do it. So we just went out there, and luckily it worked.
So when you were thinking about this, did you start something on the side before you kind of went into that? Was it something where you had anything lined up, or did you literally just like jump off and be like, we're doing this and let's go find our customers? I mean, how did the transition of that go? And again, I'm asking for just kind of people who want to be entrepreneurs that have worked for a company most of their life. And I pretty much tell you, this is gonna be really fascinating to them. Knowing sort of like, what does this look like? How do you do this?
Yeah. So it's actually funny. So Andrea and I talked about Interimly for a long time before we actually launched and started making this our full-time job. So we bought the domain Interimly probably a full year before we actually started working on Interimly, right? And then the next stage was like, let's put up a website. Let's see if we can describe what we want to do. So we did it. And then we're like, okay, this feels right. You know, it was her and I, you know, meeting, you know, once a week, every couple of weeks, just talking through things, discussing what the business might look like, what companies we want to work with. And then we really, you know, we just committed. We said, we think we can get business. We know our network. We know other people at our same company or sister companies that have left or now are working with these cool companies. They trust us. We think they'll let us handle their marketing. We hope that they will. So Andrea left probably in October. I stayed around with Campaign Monitor till about February or March. And at that time, we just kind of, you know, dove in headfirst. We said, all right, let's start reaching out to our network. Let's start drumming up business. Let's start talking to people. And luckily, once we just started kind of putting the message out there, we got a few clients right away. So it was, you know, it was a little bit before, you know, we had a full client list and got really busy. You know, over the past year, we've also had to hire, which has been awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic, actually.
Yeah. So, you know, it didn't all happen at once. It definitely happened over time. But, you know, honestly, I really thank Andrea's network and our combined network and just like the trust that we had with individuals.
So, yeah. So it's important to already, you know, have some type of network that so you're not just sort of jumping off into an abyss and you're sort of like, now what do? I don't know anybody or whatever. So that's definitely important.
It's hard to cold call people. So having that network, having those conversations already going was a huge plus for us.
That makes sense. And especially with the type of companies that you work with, I think on your site, it said that you work with series A and B, you know, kind of startups and stuff. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our clients do range, but that is kind of our sweet spot Interimly. We try to work with those companies at those stages that are really looking for growth.
Okay. It was funny. You said one thing about how you'd been thinking about it for a while and you kind of had the name picked out and you already registered the domain. And I operate just like that. That's exactly what I did with Koi Wolf. I think I've had Koi Wolf for, it has to be more than 2 years. I did like all the research early on. And I mean, I didn't know when I was going to launch it. I didn't even know exactly what it would look like. And, you know, I'm still kind of approaching it from a organic standpoint. I mean, just because I have the ability to do that. But yeah, the scariest thing to me would be, and this is for me being somewhat experienced entrepreneur, the scariest thing to me would be just coming up with an idea and executing on it in a couple of weeks. I mean, that would be crazy to me. That would be the equivalent of meeting somebody and then getting married in a month. I'd be like nuts, especially with a partner or something like that, like you have. I mean, that would be absolutely almost the same thing because partnerships are absolutely marriages. I have learned that they a different type of marriage, but they are absolutely marriages.
100%. Andrea and I are definitely work wives. We talk all the time. You know, that's also, I think, an important piece for me when going out and starting Interimly was that I had this great resource in Andrea and she had a great resource in me. So we had each other to lean on to start this business, which was wonderful. But like you said, you know, we didn't go out and do it in 2 weeks. I am a planner. And so, you know, it took a long time. You know, we had this crazy Google Sheet when we first started planning with probably 15 to 20 different docs, just going through and saying, who else does this? Who's in our network? What's our pricing going to be? What are we going to say? What do we really want to do? Who do we want to reach out to? You know, we tried to answer all of those questions for ourselves before we felt like we could really, you know, showcase the business outwardly and start generating business.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And one other thing I'll sort of just cover that you already pointed out was that your business partner has experiences that you don't have and vice versa. And it's always really good to be with a partner or partners that can help complement each other's skill sets. So that I think that's really great. looking back before you started this company, I mean, you have a lot of experience. If we were to look back at the last two companies, Campaign Monitor and Liquid Planner, it looks like you managed a wide variety of marketing channels that included paid and content and partner marketing, email, more, you know, just kind of goes on. Mm-hmm. Is there a particular channel or approach that is kind of your favorite that you like to do the most?
I mean, I really love demand gen in general, like, you know, holistically trying to think through like a full-fledged strategy. At both Campaign Monitor and Liquid Planner, I kind of owned that demand gen function. So, you know, what should our separation be between channels? How do they work together? How do we create this holistic strategy? And then how do we execute on it, right? And figure out the right resources that we need. With that being said, at Campaign Monitor specifically, organic was actually a huge driver for us. So it was a really interesting time when I entered onto the Campaign Monitor team. We were actually transitioning like audiences that we were going after. So originally, you know, it was a lot of agency and designers and developers that Campaign Monitor was focused on. And when I joined the company, we pivoted and we started going after like marketers at like these medium-sized businesses. Mm-hmm. So we came into a company that had done really well in the past. They had this great organic channel, but everything was focused on this previous audience. So it was a really unique opportunity to build on the success that they already had, but to grow organic to a new channel while trying to retain this audience from like our previous persona and channel, right? So it was a really, really interesting challenge and was also really rewarding. You know, obviously there's a ton of unknowns and a lot of misconceptions, a lot of lack of knowledge about organic in general and how to grow it, the right tactics to use. So that was probably the most rewarding part of my recent experience and the channel that I had most fun working in.
And so when you say organic, and again, this is coming from a, I've just done SEO for too long.
Yeah.
When you say organic, you generally mean getting customers, almost like the inbound concept. I mean, that you're getting people through content marketing so that they can come in through search. That's what I would consider to be, you know, kind of organic, but you're also talking about anything that you can put out there that might be on social or something else that might come in that you didn't pay for.
Yeah. So I was referring directly to organic search.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I love organic search.
Yep.
Okay, good. I love it.
Same.
yeah, like same. And it's interesting kind of hearing you talk about this because it sounds like we have a similar sort of way of thinking and likes in a sense, which is I very much consider myself a strategist. That is the most enjoyable part of digital marketing for me is thinking through literally everything and considering the psychology and the intent and just, you know, all the things, trying to understand my target market and what are problems I can solve for them before I even get to the point of even trying to let them know what the heck I do. I mean, I love all that stuff. I never get tired of it. So I'm thinking about how it is very typical for whether it be a new company or newish company. I mean, you've been around, I think, what, for a year now? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you're busy and you're good, but for a company that's like very new and they aren't hiring yet and they're just kind of getting on their feet. It's very typical to hit everything for a lot of people. In other words, and that's a lot of times that's the advice they're getting, or that's where they end up because everybody they ask says to do something different. And so they end up just sort of doing all the channels. They probably do all the channels poorly. Right. and don't have a big budget for it. And so I'm curious to know your thoughts about, you know, do you think that most companies looking to grow rapidly that are kind of new should do that? Should they hit all channels equally? Are there, you know, situations where they should instead just mainly focus on paid social or partner marketing? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it completely depends on the industry and the stage of growth that a company's at. Obviously, when you're first starting out and you have zero resources, you really have to do kind of like, you know, just guerrilla marketing, right? Like however you can get in front of people and however you can take, you know, everyone that you have your company, everyone has to get their hands dirty, right? But really, it kind of comes down to this target audience that you're going after and where they are, right? So, you know, like you might come in and say, okay, we're going after, let's say, finance professionals, right? And we know that, you know, senior level finance professionals, they're probably not hanging out on Facebook during the day. They're probably not on Twitter during the day. Maybe they're on LinkedIn, you know, like it really takes surveying your market and figuring out where they are and focusing on those channels. That being said, I always, for every company that I work with, always talk about building a foundation for scale, because you can start out and you can invest in one channel or another, and that might drive growth at the beginning, right? Maybe it's just word of mouth. Maybe it's networking that you're investing in. Maybe it's events. Maybe it's, you know, partnering and getting in front of one audience, maybe developing one channel that's delivering a lot of your revenue. You can do that in the beginning and that might make sense. But if you don't build a foundation for scale, at some point, that channel is going to plateau, right? And then if you haven't invested in your foundation for your other channels, then you have to start from scratch again. When I talk about building a foundation for scale, you know, oftentimes, let's just think about like AdWords as a channel, right? Sometimes people are so eager to get up and running that they just toss a bunch of broad match keywords in. They have like two or three campaigns, but thousands of keywords. Their messaging's not, you know, super tight. Their landing pages are all over the place. And now all of a sudden they're spending $20,000 or $30,000 a month, maybe $50,000, maybe $100,000, but they never actually built their foundation for scale, right? They went through something really quickly, launched a program, and then just let it grow without oversight. You know, the same thing happens with lead gen, right? Oftentimes a company releases their first ebook and they just plaster it everywhere. They don't really look at their targeting. They're just focused on volume. And then after a while, you just don't know what's working anymore because you didn't build the scale to tell you what's working and to tell you how you're actually getting customers. You just know that you're getting customers. So yeah, the same lessons apply, right? Like you have to build it out in the beginning and make sure that you're implementing the feedback and the learnings that you're getting over time, and don't just put a marketing program out there, scale it and see what it does.
Right. Don't. So, I mean, it really comes down to if I were to summarize a lot of the things you just said around this kind of big, broad question is you probably won't want to do all the things. you will probably want to do your research and figure out where your customers actually are, which, of course, is just sound advice anyways. And then as you do this, don't do it blindly. Always be. Aside from, of course, evaluating the effectiveness of what you're doing, but always be making sure that you're learning from the people that you're actually getting in touch with, whether it be a lead or whatever it might be, so that you can scale that over time. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think just to add one more thing to that is just always come back to your strategy, right? Who are you going after and why, and how are they going to use your software? Like software or company, whatever it is, right? You know, just don't lose touch with that. And, you know, when you launch a new program, be like, okay, is this really going after the people I want to bring in? Is it the right content that I'm serving to them that really identifies what we do? So yeah, just always keeping your strategy top of mind as you're doing that.
Okay, great. I'm going to shift it now to something I've been dying to ask you. and that has to do with, what in the heck is going on in the ESP space, the email service provider space? I know that you were at Campaign Monitor for 3 years, so you have to know something of what's going on. And from my perspective, I live in Nashville and we have an ESP called Emma, and that's one of the,
I know them super well.
Yeah. Well, they're really nice. They're awesome people. And they were acquired by Campaign Monitor recently. And I think Campaign Monitor has been sort of on a tear, you know, maybe I think they've at least bought one or two other ESPs, that I can think of. And then not too far away, kind of cousins, sort of, over in Atlanta. We've got MailChimp. And every time I log into MailChimp, which I use them too for something else, every time I log into them, something new, there's like some new option. They're like, do you want to run a Facebook ad? I'm like, what? And, do you want to send a postcard? I'm like, where am I? Like, did I land on the right place? Because I just came here to do an email campaign. And so obviously, from my perspective, you know, MailChimp is sort of trying to redefine themselves or expand themselves. What I'll go back to this. What the heck is going on? Like what's happening in a space? Because it seems like the things that MailChimp's doing is consistent with a sort of a area that's maturing. And then it seems like I think I said Campaign Monitor. Hopefully I said Campaign Monitor. And with MailChimp, it is more along the lines of almost like they're successful, but they're still trying to figure themselves out. I mean, what do you think about that?
So I actually really love this question. And it's something we discussed all the time when I was at Campaign Monitor. I think I talked to you, you know, I talked briefly earlier about how when I first came to Campaign Monitor and we were transitioning audiences, we were going from this agency designer developer, and then we started targeting this marketer at like this medium-sized company. So I think because email marketing is such a broad channel and because there are so many players in the space, you know, there are hundreds of companies in the email marketing space.
Right.
Companies that are going to be successful are really being forced into figuring out where they sit in market and who they best service. You know, these email marketing companies, because there's so many of them, they just can't be everything to everyone. You know, when I was working at Campaign Monitor, we were realizing that we really worked best with these medium to large companies in very specific industries. So industries like publishing, industries like travel, hospitality, nonprofits. So what we went and did essentially is we started partnering with other ESPs and other companies and other people who really service that same medium to large size company and who do things really well for that audience. So maybe other ESPs had certain features that service different industries well, but we all had this focus on this certain customer, right? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, MailChimp, you know, services SMBs, right? Like that's right. Where their growth has really come from. They have serviced these small businesses. You know, they help companies grow from having one customer to having 1,000 customers, right? Like that's where they really shine. So SMBs, you know, and obviously I never worked at MailChimp, so this is just my theory. But you know, SMBs really trust and grow with MailChimp. And those people at those companies, they have limited resources, right? They have way different needs than that savvy email marketer who might work at that medium to large size company. You know, that savvy email marketer, they own their email marketing program. They're focused on driving revenue. They need really direct measurement. They need a really well built out email program that, you know, maybe spans across marketing, customer success, sales, et cetera. Somebody often, you know, often somebody who's using MailChimp, which I also use for another business of mine, you know, they just need to get things done. They need to get things done fast. Right? So they need to build an email marketing campaign. They need to do X, Y, or Z. And so I think MailChimp is seeing this and saying, okay, people who use our product have limited resources and limited time. So what if we allow them to also do these other marketing needs for really small businesses all within our platform, right? Limited resources, limited time, limited funds. MailChimp just works really well for those really small companies to let them do that.
Yeah, so you see it as it has more to do with who the essentially the ESPs are targeting, and it's simply just evolution for MailChimp and who their customer base is. That and you might even say they decided that they might be leaving money on the table by basically saying if they were to say we can't do anything other than email, they'd be leaving money on the table with their target market. And they're like, why can't we do this? I mean, we're good at doing this, you know, this other thing. We could kind of bring that over to Facebook ads and I guess postcards.
That might be a test on their part. We don't know if that's been successful yet, but absolutely. I think, you know, MailChimp is like, our customer is the SMB. What does the SMB need? What does a one person, a 1 to 3 person marketing team need? they need to only have to log into one platform. They need to advertise across Facebook and Instagram. They need to, you know, they need to send emails. And maybe like you said, they need to send postcards around the holiday season to let their customers know that they appreciate them and they can still do that one-to-one level of communication. So I think MailChimp is just evolving to meet more needs of the SMB, while Campaign Monitor, Emma, these other companies that are servicing, you know, the mid-market, they're evolving to offer more features and more segmentation and more list capabilities, which is important to that segment, while MailChimp is evolving to just offer more marketing features outside of email marketing, because that's what their audience cares about.
Okay. Well, so then explain to me why or what the motivation is to still keep a feature set, at least with Campaign Monitor, that is similar to what MailChimp still does. So for example, I really like sort of the segmentation and advanced features that I can get with Campaign Monitor. And I know that Campaign Monitor has always been also kind of set up for agencies so they can, you know, have their clients in there and that type of thing. But on the low end, the feature set is not a whole lot different. So it still seems like they're going after that market too. I mean, they're going, you know, essentially top to bottom, or bottom to top, that is.
So I would say that a lot of that is legacy, right? Campaign Monitor's grown with these small businesses, with these agencies, with these designers and developers. So Campaign Monitor is never going to want to leave those people behind. They're not going to take away features that those people use. They're not going to take away pricing that they have, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to make sure that those products are still working really well for that core audience who supported them from the very beginning, right? But in terms of forward movement, they're building a lot of features and adding a lot of things that actually work really well for this core market. And, you know, I mentioned this earlier, kind of this idea of this like savvy email marketer. That's not saying that there can't be a super savvy email marketer at a small company, right? Sometimes somebody's going to want to come in and they're going to want those more advanced features.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think as a company also in the ESV space, it's really hard to focus solely on one audience, because you're always going to have outliers that come and use your service, right? But I guess the key thing is you do have to focus somewhere in the market so that you are not trying to be everything to everyone.
So would it be your prediction that we're going to see Campaign Monitor kind of grow more into almost like a demand gen Marketo type of thing, or is that too far?
You know, that's hard to say. It would take a lot of time and resources to really pivot a company that much. I do think, however, there's going to be a consolidation in these ESPs that are targeting, you know, these companies in the mid-market. There's going to be consolidation, and they're just going to really figure out, you know, who each ESP is targeting and why and how to speak to that audience really, really well.
Okay. All right. Well, we will stop talking about MailChimp, Campaign Monitor now. I'll give you a breather.
It's fun to speculate, which is, you know, half of what I'm saying here is obviously speculation on my part. That's just how I see the industry in general and what's happening.
Well, it's very interesting to me, so I appreciate that. I'm going to wrap it up with a couple more questions, things that I'm very interested in hearing, and I think people listening would like to hear about too. So in the past year, if you could even do this without, you know, giving any special sauce away or, you know, whatever, what's a strategy or a tactic you did for a client this past year that ended up just performing better than you ever expected? Something that you're like, oh, we need to do this more, and we need to figure out new ways to kind of do this, whether it be with the same client or others.
The interesting thing about the clients that we've been working with for the past year is we've come in and we've built a lot of like new programs from scratch. So it's hard to say like a strategy or tactic has performed much better than you expected, because we're coming into these companies and we're building their content program from scratch. We're building all of their paid programs from scratch. We're helping them figure out who to hire. We're helping them figure out how much they should spend. And Yeah, so it's hard to say that there's like one strategy or tactic that we like, oh, this is an all-star tactic. We should apply it across everyone.
What I hear you saying is that the companies that you work for are basically starting at ground zero for them. I mean, they're just, they got nothing and now they need to have something. And you're making sure that the things that, that you do for them or have them do are done correctly and are the right things.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier, this foundation for scale. So, you know, sometimes we come into companies that do already have programs running, but maybe they weren't set up the right way, right? So just kind of course correcting, helping them build like an actual strategy to play into and to tie their programs into, to tie their revenue goals together. You know, it's just crazy how much having like a working budget, having a pipeline model, and having your tops-down approach to achieving that, like just having those three pieces for a marketing, sales, you know, operations org, how much that brings the team together and gives them a clear focus.
And I will say that when I had an agency, which was before Raven, it was actually what created Raven. The best clients are definitely ones that have a budget. They're the ones that actually let you execute on what you know is going to work and of course can pay for it. So that's, I think you've done a very good job in the type of companies you're working with. So, you know, kudos to you on that. So last question, and it has to do with startups because you work with those companies, and I'm really interested in knowing your take on the most common marketing mistakes that startups end up doing. You know, from your perspective and everything you've observed and of course, how you try to help your clients steer clear from, you know, what are the mistakes that a lot of startups typically make?
Absolutely. So I would say there are two and I'll separate them out. The first is not assigning enough budget or resources to marketing. So a lot of the companies that we work with, you know, they'll get their Series A funding and then all of a sudden they have these really steep growth goals, right? Like they're trying to generate, you know, $3 million, $5 million, $10 million in pipeline, but they've actually only assigned $50,000 to $100,000 for marketing, right? And they only have a two-person team.
Oh,
so in reality, that's impossible, right? You just can't do it. So a lot of what we do is we actually come in and we educate the company. I think it's oftentimes misunderstood the importance of marketing, how long things take, how much money things actually cost, right? Like how much money you actually have to spend to start generating enough leads to actually make your conversion rates work to deliver that pipeline, right? So I think the first is definitely not enough budget or resources. I think the second mistake that a lot of, you know, other people in these startups, as well as marketing individuals make, is they tie themselves to really strict ROI goals or CPA goals before they actually even know enough about their business for that to make sense. So they come in and they're like, okay, marketing, you can spend money, but it has to be at $100 CPA. And I see this all the time. And so I work with a marketing individual and they're like, okay, we can spend money, but it has to be at $100 CPA. And I say, why? Where does that come from? They're like, well, I don't know. It was just a number that, you know, finance and ops and sales and marketing came together and agreed on. But in reality, you know, their conversion rates might tell a completely different story.
Do good investors or VCs, do they typically help them not go down that road, or you just see people across the board making bad decisions like that? I mean, like it could be an investor that that just hasn't done a lot of this and doesn't know what you just described, or it could be somebody actually running the company or somebody they've hired who again isn't even thinking like that, and maybe the they're not listening to the investor, or, you know, I mean, like where, who influences this? I mean, where are all these bad ideas coming from is what I'm trying to say.
So it completely depends, right? So you think about the leaders of these companies or even the investors, you know, they have varying backgrounds. Not everyone has a marketing background, right? So if you get a product person that's leading an investment round with another product person who's partnering with a salesperson, you know, maybe the two co-founders are product and sales. There's a really product focused person investing in them, you know, and they've just never had marketing before. Oftentimes people just don't know where to start. And that's actually, you know, quite normal for people who don't have extensive marketing backgrounds. You know, they feel like they have to put in some guidelines or put in some dollar amount, you know, without really knowing what that should be. So oftentimes they just set a dollar amount, whether it's a budget or a CPA goal or whatever it is, just to set it. But then, you know, it's really up to the marketing individuals that come in to push back on that and kind of redefine the way they work. So it can come from a number of places.
It reminds me of, I know and have known people who are very intelligent. They mm-hmm. are put in a roller position to make all these decisions. And up to this point, they've gotten by making everything based on, you know, data points. It's what the spreadsheet says. And that's how I know. I don't have to be super knowledgeable or experienced in whatever it might be. I just know that give me your data points. And if these data points don't, you know, meet that, then you're failing. And because that's kind of what I hear you saying is definitely that's not the right direction to go, the way to approach it. And really, if you want to succeed and you're finding yourself not succeeding, it may end up being that you know, your approach that has worked well for you all your life, you know, or in your career, doesn't apply to the nature of marketing every any startup, which of course, by the way, I know this company. It's Interimly and they're really good at helping those people and those companies be able to be successful. So there you go. Look, I did it all full circle.
I know. I love it. I love it.
Thanks for talking with me today. I mean, this is really interesting. I'm excited about your company and it's always great to be a young company and be growing and hiring. And it sounds like you get to work with some pretty interesting startups. So that's always fun too. So, but thank you for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me. This has been great. And I'm super stoked to see where Coywolf goes and who you chat with next.
Thanks. Me too.